The English Civil Wars, 1639 to 1660. The Battle of Seacroft Moor. This is the last battle that takes place in March of 1643. This kind of goes back a little bit. On February the 22nd, Queen Henrietta Marie arrived in Yorkshire port of Bridlington with war materials and English officers brought back to England to support the king. Henrietta Marie's presence and the addition of the materials and officers to the army at Newcastle were not only a boost to the royalist efforts in Yorkshire, but did manage to persuade at least one parliamentarian governor, Sir Hugh Cholmondeley of Scarborough, to switch sides and declare for the king. Because of these changes in strength of the royalists in Yorkshire, Lord Fairfax felt vulnerable and decided to move his army from Shelby to Leeds. Now, in order to move his army from Shelby to Leeds without risking his slow artillery train being attacked, Lord Fairfax decided to create a diversion. It was designed to keep Newcastle's forces from leaving their positions to pursue the parliamentarian convoy. Lord Fairfax ordered his son, Lieutenant General Thomas Fairfax, a couple of detachments of cavalry and 4,000 infantry, and attack Tadcaster, thereby threatening York. Well, Thomas Fairfax did as ordered. He arrived at Tadcaster and the royalist garrison fled. After spending a few hours in Tadcaster destroying the royalist fortifications, parliamentarians left, marching west to meet up with Lord Fairfax in Leeds. Meanwhile, Newcastle dispatched his cavalry commander, Goring, with 20 troops of cavalry to confront Fairfax's parliamentarians. Now, Goring and his forces tracked and reached the rear guard of the parliamentarian force before they reached Brenham Moor. Fairfax, however, was able to use his small cavalry force and narrow roadway to protect his infantry that had been sent ahead. After the royalists were pushed back, Fairfax and his cavalry broke away and rode to catch up with the infantry units. At Brenham Moor, to his dismay, Fairfax found that the infantry, composed mostly of countrymen as opposed to disciplined professional soldiers, had stopped at the edge of the moor waiting for orders. Fairfax got his infantry to resume their march, but had to defend against Goring's cavalry again as the parliamentarian foot crossed the moor. Once the parliamentarian infantry was across the moor, they reached an area where the fields were enclosed, providing troops protection against the royalist cavalry. Thinking they had finally gotten out of danger, they weren't really too concerned the fact that there was another moor, which Fairfax would call Seacroft Moor, up ahead. Well, the infantry soldiers broke rank seeking drink among the houses in a small village. Once again, Fairfax and his officers managed to bring the troops to order and got them moving through a moor on the roadway to Leeds. Meanwhile, Goring and the Royalist cavalry had found a way to swing north around the enclosed fields in an undetected manner and attack the parliamentarian infantry as they marched along. Now, the final attack took place in the moor that Fairfax had called Seacroft Moor. It's actually, unknown to Fairfax, was known as Wynn Moor. At this point in the march to Leeds, Fairfax's infantry lines were not tight and compact. The soldiers were tired, they'd been straggling, and the units were extended along the length of the moor. Unfortunately, the parliamentarian infantry units did not include many experienced pikemen who could have helped to hold off the royalist cavalry while the musketeers reloaded. The royalists now attacked the parliamentarian infantry, not only from the rear, but also along the flank. There was little that the smaller parliamentarian cavalry could do to protect an extended line of infantry in an open moor. Fairly quickly, the parliamentarians' infantry threw down their arms and ran for it. Now, many of them were killed, but a large number were taken prisoner. Some countrymen deserted and found their way back to their Yorkshire homes. The parliamentarian cavalry could not withstand the charge, but escaped west, along with Lieutenant General Fairfax, who eventually reached Leeds. Now, Fairfax called the battle one of the greatest losses we ever received. It was estimated that as many as 200 parliamentarians were killed and 1,000 were taken prisoner, out of less than 5,000 men. The number of royalist casualties is unknown, but it's probably estimated at less than 50. Now, the aftermath of this Lord Fairfax and the Parliamentary Field Army, along with the artillery train, did indeed reach Leeds safely, but unfortunately at a very high cost considering the losses at Seacroft Moor. Now, Lieutenant General Fairfax was, of course, castigated by the wives and the families of the soldiers lost in battle. The criticism was actually so bad that on May the 21st, Fairfax launched an attack on the Royal Garrison at Wakefield to take prisoners that he might exchange for the men that he lost at Seacroft Moor. So it's unusual. We've had a couple of battles already in March where one name is correct and there's really another name for it. And so here we have a mistake on the Moor instead of Seacroft, it's really Winmore. And of course, we have this situation again with the Royalist infantry. You know, that infantry needs, you need training. And if you're going to use your musketeers, you need pikemen. Because if the cavalry charges and you fire your muskets and their accuracy is terrible to begin with, they can't just stop, reload, because the cavalry will then just tear them apart. But if you've got pikemen, they can at least stick the pikes directly out in front, and that'll keep the cavalry from charging into them. You know, I've spent so much time studying the Napoleonic Wars, and of course the wars in the 1700s as well, with the ability to maneuver your infantry with bayonets and form squares, and you have line formations and how to deal with cavalry. And they're perfectly capable of dealing with cavalry here at this particular time. It just requires experience. And most of the men have had some idea of what the pike was used for. Unfortunately, their monthly workout, if you will, was light training with a quick shot of beer at the local tavern. Both sides are dealing with some experienced commanders who've been overseas, but basically all of the troops are just newbies. They're just like new recruits trying to figure out how this is going to work, and it's not a game. Now, Cromwell's going to fix that with the parliamentarians when he begins to create the Ironside Army, and we'll get into that much later. Now, the sources for this: History of England by Thornton, Lockyer, and Smith, Fairfax by Wilson, Cavaliers versus Roundheads, English Civil War 1642-1649, English Civil Wars 1640-1660 by Warden, English Civil War 1642-1651 by Gaunt, and English Civil War Atlas and Concise History of the Wars of the Three Kingdoms 1639-51 by Lipscomb. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.